makes us scream. Andy Moan, now whoa, 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 Andy, whoa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Blake Schell and Adam McIsaac. Blake is the executive and artistic director of Oregon Contemporary, and Adam is a board member and a graphic designer. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus.
Entirely my pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So Portlanders who know about art will know about Disjecta, which was formed, I think, 20 years ago. Its most recent home was in Kenton. And Disjecta had a strange kind of history. It seemed to come and go, but now it's been completely revamped, I think, and rechristened. It's called Oregon Contemporary. So Blake, you're kind of the figurehead there, and you know, you're the face of the place. And Adam, you're a board member, and you also work with Jelly Helm, who worked on the, you know, the concept. So just tell us why Disjecta has changed.
Well, I think in many ways, this is a natural progression of how the organization has been growing over the years. Getting to this building, and that was in 2008, with such a large square footage and beautiful space to present, and then the creation of the curator in residence program and the biennial coming over here, that all started a solidification of just the amazing visual arts programs here that had been happening throughout its history, but now had a home and some programs that were really known and loved in the community. And then since then, we've been growing in so many different ways in our partnerships, in strengthening our own programs, but also bringing others into the building and having strong tenants so that you can see art all over the building and give people a chance to come and see multiple art experiences. So I think all of this has been gearing up for this time, and it felt like we had gotten the organization to a certain place and we were ready to think about the larger branding and the name and what it means to a larger community. And that's when Adam and I started talking about this.
Adam, what does Disjecta mean? And then does Oregon Contemporary mean you broaden now, you're like state-based?
Okay, Disjecta is word that I believe, and Blake, step in here because I can never really remember the exact reference. I believe it's a book, it's a word that means leftovers from the potter's, you know, working area. So things that have been cast off from making art. And I believe that it was the title of a book of writings by, oh yeah, Beckett. Mm-hmm. So a great name for a small organization that is serving a very narrow constituency, I think. And, you know, the first 15 years of Disjecta, it was like that. I mean, it's almost like a nightclub or a punk band in a lot of ways. So completely fit. The difficulty is that as we grew larger, our public also grew larger. And so the name, which is, you know, from a book by Samuel Beckett and is a Latin word, is in and of itself kind of self-selecting. You know, if you take my meaning here, it's not really a super welcoming name for larger groups of people historically who have been either unrepresented or historically excluded. Mm-hmm. So we felt that it was time to kind of change the name to fit something that matched the organization's broader scope. Now, this does not necessarily mean that we're limiting ourselves to Oregon. I think there will still be exhibitions from international artists, as there have been in the past. We're not limiting ourselves strictly to a regional, but we are focusing on serving Oregon, not just serving one constituency, but we're focusing on serving Oregon at large. So that's urban and rural.
Where would you say you fit in between PICA, you know, the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, the museum, which covers the whole state and beyond. What's your little niche, would you say?
Well, I think that there's overlaps between all of these institutions for sure. I mean, we're a good bit smaller than the Portland Art Museum and contemporary focused. And I think that that's a big difference because there are a number of different visual arts programs at the Portland Art Museum, and they all together explore a wider selection of visual arts and programs, while we're really focused on now, what is happening now, and not defining contemporary art, but looking for the opportunities of all the ways to show contemporary art and what artists are doing in this region and beyond and bringing it here. And I think that PICA does a lot of that work as well. I think that probably one aspect is we tend to have more exhibitions while they're more performance-based, but we both have both. And I think that it's really just that we fulfill different things through the biennial, through TBA. We have different programs that do great things for contemporary art in this region. And we share resources, and they're friends of ours. So, yeah, we love PICA and the Portland Art Museum too. We're always working together on things to make things happen for the larger community.
Right. None of us has to lose for all of us to win.
Exactly.
So the first show of under the new name Oregon Contemporary is called Time Being. It runs through August the 8th, 2021, and it's all women, and the subject or the sort of limit is the figure. Everyone's working with the figure. So it's a really good show, really interesting, very diverse styles, but it is all flat work on walls. There are some kind of sculptures. Where did this concept come from?
These were artists that I was interested in working with, and I started looking at common threads and ended up connecting these six artists. And there is a lot of 2D work, but we actually have a number of sculptures and some video in the show too. And I feel like the thing that really drew me into the overall concept, besides just really loving all of these artists and their practices at large, was seeing how much they were doing within figurative work that was really out there and unexpected, and distortions of the body and weird choices that make you think about things. You know, I think that I was saying to someone at the opening, we could say this is all, you know, femme and queer identifying artists dealing with the figure, but to look at the work, there's so much happening, and there's so much context of emotions and feelings, thoughts about the pandemic, thoughts about politics. There's just a lot happening within every artist's practice. And so I wanted to see them in dialogue. And we actually planned the show to open last December, and we weren't able to push back all of our shows. Some of our shows, we kind of were, you know, stuck with timelines for artists outside of the region. But with the pandemic, we felt like since all of these artists are in Oregon, it was possible to push it back to a time where we hoped that more people would get to see the work in person. And fortunately, it did work out that way. And we were able to have a big opening night for the new name of the organization and for the show having recently opened, and get a lot of people to come into the building and see the work in person.
So as you come in from the courtyard, there's a main wall with these gold shapes. They're kind of like stickers. They look like vinyl stickers. There's no frame. There's no backing to them. And they look as sort of like liquid, you know, like gold paint and black. They're very slick looking. This is the work of Samantha Wall. And around the corner of the same kind of wall is gray and black and silver pictures, parts of the body. Who is Samantha Wall, and what is this technique she's using? You know, it's very photographic. It's not really something I've seen before.
Yeah, Samantha is an amazing artist represented by Russo Lee Gallery, as is Elizabeth Malaska, who's also in the show. And Samantha's work I've been in love with for a long time, but didn't get to have a show with Samantha at the Art Gym because Terry Hopkins had curated Samantha into a show right before I started there. So yeah, I've been wanting to work with Samantha for a long time, but her technique, she actually did a time-lapsed video showing her technique for our virtual auction in the spring, and it was amazing to get to see, but I'm sure I won't describe it quite right, but she's masking off parts and ink is placed down and then manipulated by her in terms of how it moves. But there's basically a real combination of skillful technique in her work and then chance, because there is this element of the ink flowing over the paper that she's controlling, but some of it is part of just what happens in the studio in that process. And the works that you were talking about at first, when you first walk in, that are free floating on the wall, are hands that are put together, and there's gold leaf on the back, although it doesn't read as that metallic shiny because it's on the back of this material, but it gives it that warm tone, and that really was born out of a conversation with Samantha about the color of the wall as well.
So Samantha's pictures, that I guess they're based on photos, right? They kind of look like solarized photos. Is that kind of negative silvery quality to them? Does she do anything else? Does she do like painting or sculpture?
So these are actual like works on paper. They aren't photos. So I do think she works from photos as she's doing the drawings and the outlines and making the work sometimes. But yeah, it's not photographs.
Jaleesa Johnson's work. These are ink on paper. They're framed. You can kind of see the ripples in the paper. And she draws, I think it's a single line. So she'll draw an outline of a nude woman moving. And then part of the drawing, usually the head, is obscured by a kind of a big ink blot, a carefully, created blot. Just tell us a bit about Jaleesa and, I read that she's a dancer. So what is the source of these women moving?
Yeah, Jaleesa is often using herself as the figure. And I think that her work is so interesting in that she is a dancer and then she's also a video artist. There's a video work that has her figure in it and possibly other figures in it. In the show as well, but it's very abstracted, and the video work is very graphic and brightly colored. Dual video that's happening in the exhibition, where you can see her figure and maybe the figures of others coming and going, but it's very graphic and colorful, while her drawings are black and white and smaller in scale. And those are something that we talked about, really relating to some of the other artists' works in the show. Those are really kind of like Jaleesa's meeting herself in time, because there's multiples of her figure within those drawings. But also definitely a big focus of it is hair. And those ink blobs that you're talking about, representing the hair and showing, black femme hair. And in some of the drawings in the gridded section, there's actual hair included within those collages. So some really beautiful things about the body, about the figure, about Black identity, and also some like strange, interesting choices about figures meeting in the same place over time as well.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Blake Schell and Adam McIsaac. They are the executive and artistic director and a board member of Oregon Contemporary. There are some really interesting paintings in the show by Elizabeth Malaska. These seem to be sort of ironic depictions of women, not flattering at all. Their bodies are misshapen. They're sort of comic. There's a woman struggling with a dog on a long chain. There's another one of a woman doing yoga, and she's sort of, her body is almost double the size of normal because she's contorted. But they're really well detailed, well executed paintings, and they're slightly narrative. What do you know about Elizabeth, and how does, when she's working on the form, is this kind of typical of her, or is this something special she did for this show, for this concept?
So the paintings that you're talking about, we have one older work on paper, but the two that you're referencing are new for the exhibition. But I do think that they speak to Elizabeth's practice in general. Elizabeth does amazing things with paint, using different painting techniques within the same painting, as well as the compositions or referencing art history, referencing contemporary times. I feel like these works, the thing that stands out for me is that they really point to the pandemic, the idea of, being in the living room with your dog and your cat and being on a walk with your dog while there are people over to the side that you're not engaging with. I've seen in the past a lot more figures connecting in her work or being in the same space. And so I do think this is in a way pandemic Elizabeth Malaska works, but with the same qualities of really interesting combinations of painting techniques and also with just, strange unexpected details that make you think of your own storylines of what's happening in those spaces. I think those are all common things with her work.
Lisa Jarrett has, it says in the blurb that she examines Black femme culture. So you have all these hair nets that are stuck flat down, and they're amazing. They look like wireframe computer models.
That work of Jaleesa's very related to the body and Black femme identity. I love that combination, as well as the work of Maya Vivas in that room.
And that's all in the same room. So she does these ceramic shapes. They're very organic and very refined, very smooth. And they look kind of like sexual organs, like 1930s sci-fi robot kind of things. And tell us about Maya. It says her sculptural ceramics are queered future bodies engaged in self-evolution.
Really thinking about these works as individual kind of creatures or beings, which that sci-fi element that you're mentioning, there are threads of that throughout the entire show, which I just love. We talked a lot about, are these beings growing or shrinking, and is this one giving birth to the other? And I do think that there is a relationship to like organs and the body, just the scale of them, because these like creatures are smaller than us and on the wall, so people are thinking about organs as well. But I also love thinking of them as something from the future and something that's evolved past our current conceptions of the body and ways of being, and that the piercings are a clue in that these are bodies on their own. And I also love how in relationship to the Louise Bourgeois eyes that are our eye benches that are part of our special on loan program that are out in the courtyard, you can see them out through the window while you're looking at Maya's work. And I just think that there's a relationship from kind of the deep carvings in the ceramics that Maya does and the deep carving into the granite of the eye benches.
You could sit on those benches, right? They're not out of, you know, they're not untouchable.
That's right. We've had people climbing all over them. We've had some performances by some of our tenants where they had classes and there were little ballerinas jumping off of them. And yeah, it's been amazing. But yeah, the back of the eyes are functional benches.
Bean Gilsdorf is a sculptor. We've had her on before. And also her husband, Dan, has been on talking about tattoos. He did my tattoo. So Bean does first ladies, American first ladies, faces attached to a sort of a soft sculpture, kind of a fashion item. Some of them are flat and in frames. Some of them are in 3D on a kind of a, they're standing in the room so you can walk around them. Did Bean start on this before the pandemic, or is this sort of introverted pandemic work? Do you know?
No, Bean has been working with the First Ladies for a while now, and I was familiar with the First Ladies on the stands, and yeah, they kind of look like tripods, but they also are kind of this spidery look to them that really makes them bizarre and interesting, and how the fabric and figures are draped over those stands really distorts the figure, which I love. But the Jackie O's, the ones that you were talking about being framed in 2D, which they're not quite 2D because they're actually sandwiched between glass, and so they are flattened, but there's still dimension there. And then there's the shadow of them on the wall because they aren't backed by a mat or a board. They're free-floating. And that work was work that Bean was really interested in completing and getting framed in this new way for this show. And so it worked out to get to show them these for the first time in this exhibition, which has been great. I think that the dimension and the flattening fits with the distortions and the relationships with the other artists, but in this different way where Bean is really reflecting on media and distortions through the lens of that on these women who are, you know, political figures but without much power, that also become fashion icons and are representative of things beyond their own lives. So I love that there's a different take in that, but this relationship to dualities and distortions of the figure as well.
So Adam McIsaac, you're a board member, and you know Jelly Helm, whose company did the kind of rebrand. Explain this thing about O and then X.
So yes, Jelly is a friend and colleague. We've worked together, and we worked together on this particular identity as well. There's two things. We asked him to come in and actually, you know, consult with us. He's named a lot of organizations in the area. He's a good namer, and the reason why he's good is because sometimes creative companies like to do stuff pro bono because that means that they believe that it means that they can do anything they want. That's not always the best recipe for the most meaningful creative. And one of the reasons why I was so delighted that Jelly took a role in this is because I knew that even though he worked pro bono, I also knew that he would take it as seriously as any paying client. So that was how he got involved, and he continues to be involved as a strategist and as a kind of a consigliere for us. Again, very grateful for that. The way that the name ended up is the full official name of Oregon Contemporary is Oregon Center for Contemporary Art. We shorten it to Oregon Contemporary, and it's manifested as a symbol, as a perfectly round O, which stands not only for the space, or not only for Oregon, but also for the kind of large rounded space that Disjecta occupies. And it's a container. So an organization is like Oregon Contemporary is a container for what is inside. And then the X is a shorthand for contemporary art. It's meant to be a superscript, raised to the power of, from a comment that John Cage made and that was widely published in Sister Corita Kent's Rules for Making Art at Immaculate Heart University. Cage said something along the lines of, we want to change the world, change everything, and how do we do that? By leaving plenty of room for X quantities. And so that's kind of what the X stands for. We don't know what's going to be in the building, in the space, in any particular time. It continues to be open and to a certain extent wild. And I thought that was really important. The other thing that I want to say about the name, vis-a-vis its previous name, is that the name, in the same way that the logo works, by acting as a container for what's inside. So we're not really talking about trying to impose any kind of particular view of contemporary art. We're using the entire space and the name as a way of framing what's happening in contemporary art.
So does that mean, Blake and Adam, that in Portland, if you think, I want to see some contemporary art, you'll be able to go to Oregon Contemporary and there'll be a new show every month or every 2 months?
Oh, that's a great question. So yes, we will have a lot of the shows that we do at Oregon Contemporary are really large scale and may be up for months to get the most people through to get to see it. But we have multiple gallery spaces, so we'll be showing multiple shows at the same time, but also we have tenant partner spaces. So we have those, we'll have new exhibitions, often monthly. My favorite thing that was First Saturdays, so we're bringing those back August 7th. We'll have a big open house where all of our tenants are open, as well as our large exhibitions and events.
So I'll take this opportunity to jump in and remind people that almost all the programming at Oregon Contemporary is free to the public.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Blake Schell and Adam McIsaac. Blake is the executive and artistic director, and Adam is a board member at Oregon Contemporary, which is the new name for what used to be Disjecta. It's now bigger and better than ever, and open, I think, more than the old place used to be. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus.
Thank you so much, Joseph.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 13 de julio del 2021. En Irak, al menos 64 personas murieron y más de 100 sufrieron quemaduras e inhalación de humo, luego de que un incendio arrasara una sala de aislamiento del COVID-19 en un hospital en la ciudad de Nasiriyah. El fuego del lunes fue alimentado por la explosión de un bote de oxígeno. Un incendio similar en abril mató 82 personas y lastimó a más de un centenar en un hospital de Bagdad. El último desastre se produjo cuando Irak registró su tasa diaria de infección más alta de la pandemia y mientras los iraquíes han estado realizando protestas